Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Debt collectors have a job to do. There's a right way and a wrong way. Unfortunately, the Office of Attorney General Richard Cordray has seen a dramatic increase in the number of complaints about debt collectors doing it the wrong way. That's a function in part of the increased number of people who have fallen behind during this economic downturn, no doubt. We're going to talk about the other reasons today and how folks can protect themselves from unscrupulous debt collectors. So, joining us today, Gail Hillebrand. She's Senior Attorney for Consumers Union Financial Services. Consumers Union is the nonprofit publisher of Consumer Reports magazine. Consumer credit is just one of the many issues that Gail Hillebrand works on. And so thanks for joining us, Gail.
You're welcome.
And Susan Che. She's Chief of the Consumer Protection Section of the Office of the Ohio Attorney General. Susan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Jackie Gutter manages collections defense work for the Legal Aid Society of Columbus. She developed the new Consumer Defense Clinic, sponsored and introduced last week by the Office of the Ohio Attorney General and the Columbus Bar Association. So glad you could be here with us too, Jackie.
Thank you.
You know, Gail and Susan, we hear about the predatory practices by debt collectors and the consumers' rights, but what are the big problems now, and what is the problem that has spurred spurred concern? Susan?
Oh, sure. I think, Anne, you've alluded to some of it, which is that the economy has increased debt collection efforts. Right now, we saw a large increase in 2009. We just finished kind of collating our 2009 numbers, and it's about 10% of our complaints and inquiries that we received. So last year, in 2009, we received 30,000 complaints and inquiries into AG's office, and about 10% of those were related to debt collection. In terms of some of the larger issues that we're seeing, we're getting a lot of complaints about, for instance, debt collectors contacting third parties, people that may be related to the debtor, and asking for more information than they're allowed to by law. We're seeing really egregious types of harassment complaints. For instance, threats of jail time, which is illegal. We're also seeing issues related to debt collectors contacting debtors at work, which is generally prohibited, especially obviously if the employer prohibits it, but especially after the employee has asked them to cease contact with them. So we're seeing an increase, and we're also seeing an aggressiveness in terms of debt collectors taking more and more steps to collect debt.
Gail, how does the debt collection business work?
Well, that's part of the problem here. We are seeing there are over 400 companies now that purchase old debt, and sometimes they sell it to one another. So if you can't pay your bills, the sooner that you contact your creditor and say, I have a problem, can you put me on a payment plan, can we work this out, the better chance you have of heading it off of ever going out to an outside collection. When it goes to outside collection, it can be on kind of a fee-for-service basis, or the outside collector can actually buy the debt and own it. And once your debt starts to be sold and resold, you might be getting a call today about a debt that's 5 years old. And maybe no one has contacted you for 3 or 4 years about that debt. That makes it really hard for you to find your own records and figure out, do I owe this money? Is it me? How do I prove it's not me? How do I prove that I paid?
It sounds a lot like how they were bundling up the mortgages. Is it the same thing?
It's very much the same thing, except here, sometimes it's you and sometimes it's someone else. The debt buyer purchases a list of names and Social Security numbers and debt amounts, and then they call you up and say, pay us. And they don't actually have the records to show whether you owe that money or not.
Right. So what we're seeing, for instance, is that they'll just get like an electronic transfer of very de minimis information. And then based on that list, they'll start making collection efforts. But, for instance, consumers get confused because, for instance, that debt may have been charged off by the credit card company. So in their minds, they think that that debt is gone, but it isn't. It's probably been sold and resold to these debt buyers. The other issue that we've seen is that some folks have discharged these debts in bankruptcy, and then, again, consumers get confused because they don't know the law, and then they get recontacted on debts that really these folks can't contact them on.
So if those have been discharged in a bankruptcy proceeding, mm-hmm. though, do they still owe the money?
They do not.
Okay.
If the bankruptcy was properly discharged, they do not. And I guess we'll talk more about some things that consumers can do later.
There is the Federal Trade Commission. Why can't the Federal Trade Commission handle the problems? Isn't that what they do?
a good idea to complain to both the Federal Trade Commission and your local attorney, your state attorney general, about the problem that you're experiencing. But the FTC is a small agency. This is a big nationwide problem. They have been looking into some of the debt collection problems, including they did a hearing on the fact that people are still not getting notice when they've been sued by a debt collector. The paperwork will be filed in the court, but the notices are not, in fact, always getting to the consumer. So they are looking at the problem, but they need to hear from consumers when it happens to them as well.
In Ohio, Credit Bureau Collection Services recently was ordered to pay $1.1 million in a civil penalty and sign a consent decree, that promising to change their ways. But they still say that they didn't do anything wrong, that they're not admitting wrongdoing. And so why does something like this happen, Susan?
Well, I'm familiar with the consent decree with CBCS, and in that they agreed to pay a large civil penalty, and for that they agreed that they would continue to follow the law, if you will, and they also agreed to some best practices, including information about how to file a complaint with the FTC. So I can't talk to the settlement discussion. I was not part of them, but most companies in a consent to resolve the matter will generally not agree that they've done anything wrong.
Now, Gail one time had somebody calling me repeatedly. I wouldn't call it harassment. They were just doing their job, but it was over a debt that wasn't mine. They never are. And but it really they had a different Social Security number and that sort of thing. And I talked with them over and over and over again very calmly about it without, you know, throwing anything around to do that. And eventually they stopped calling. They seem to believe me, but I still wonder sometimes, are they out there?
Well, they're definitely out there. When you're getting those phone calls and it's not you, it may be worth it to talk to the collector once and say it's not me. But don't give your personal information out. Don't say, here's my SSN. Does it match up to yours? Don't give your bank account information. And after that experience, you might also want to order your credit report and make sure it hasn't been reported against you.
Right.
Okay.
And if folks do want to, we actually always ask folks to make sure they understand where they can get their free credit report. So, for instance, the only place to get a free credit report is annualcreditreport.com. And so we do encourage folks to check their credit bureaus for free to make sure the information is accurate.
Well, now, there is that freecreditreport.com out there. What happened with that recently?
It's not so free.
Chuckle, chuckle. What was the deal with that?
There are a number of services that try to get you to think it's the official free credit report site. Annualcreditreport.com is the only free site. All of the other ones, you have to buy something to get a credit report. And the Federal Trade Commission recently required them to make it a little clearer that they're not the official site. But if you're asked to buy something or to give your card information, it's not the free site, and you want to keep looking.
Okay, if you're just joining us, my guest, Susan Che from the Ohio Attorney General's Office, section of the Consumer Protection Section. Jackie Gutter, Legal Aid of Columbus, she's a staff attorney there. She'll be joining us in a few minutes. And also on the phone, Gail Hillebrand. She is a senior attorney with Consumers Union Financial Services. Let's take some calls right now, 614-292-8513. And Tim, you're on the air. You want to talk about how to stop calls?
Yes, thank you for your time as always. Yes, we moved into a new home about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and about 6 months after we moved in, we kept getting calls for always the same individual. This person's never lived at this address as far as I know. Literally, I think we've probably fielded about 100 calls in the course of that time, year and a half or so.
Wow.
And I started off being relatively kind and civil, but it just doesn't seem to help. Now, over time, they probably have gone down a little bit, but they're still calling. I get a call at least probably once a week for this person. Don't know who they are, have no idea.
This sounds like a credit, a debt collector that doesn't have all the information.
Well, I was listening earlier. It sounds like one where they may have just received a huge database of debt over time, and that person's name and our number shows up somehow.
You know, what kind of rights does someone like Tim have? Gail?
Well, you can write to the collector saying, don't contact me anymore. It doesn't stop the collection process, so if they actually think it's you or can prove it's you, they can still sue you and do other things. But you can write them saying, stop contacting me. If you have a lawyer, you can say, contact my lawyer instead, but you can also just say, stop contacting me, and they do have to honor that.
Yeah, the thing that's so frustrating is that generally once in a while, it'll be a live person. Most recently, it's been one of those robocalls or whatever you want to call it. And so there's nothing there but a 1-800 number. And I went as far as to contact the Attorney General in Arkansas, I think it was, based upon information I had of one of the numbers. But I received a response from them indicating that that was not their jurisdiction.
Exactly. I mean, and part of the problem here is there are very specific rules on what debt collectors can and can't do, but there's not enough enforcement. And you know, the Attorney Generals are out there. When they find the bad actors, they go after them. But that's a one-by-one. It takes a long time.
Given that I would only have a phone number generally, is there anything I can do in terms of looking more specifically as to where it might be coming from? That's really all that I'm getting generally. The companies are never named, at least at this point.
Yeah, and you've already done the main thing, which is to complain to the AG in the state where they are, and maybe your AG as well may be able to help you.
Right, and what you're saying, though, it has to be on a state-by-state basis based on where I think the call is originating as opposed to a federal agency of some sort?
Well, you can complain to the Federal Trade Commission as well. They do not handle individual complaints. What they do with your complaint is keep it in a file, and if they have enough about a company, they may open an investigation. So it can help other people, but it might not help you directly.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Gosh, if you thought the political robocalls were bad, how about getting one from a collection agency? That's got to be salt in the wounds. Susan, if somebody calls the Ohio Attorney General's office with a complaint like that, they're sort of a third party.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. They don't owe the money. They're not after them about the money, but they're caught in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of rights do they have in Ohio?
Well, we would say that they have rights under both the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act and also under the Consumer Sales Practices Act. And we do receive complaints like that. We've kind of named them wrong person communications. In other words, they're either contacting to try to get information or they think that you're the actual debtor in that instance. Along what Gail said, we encourage consumers to write. But also, if Ohio consumers, regardless of where the call is originating from, if Ohio consumers contact us, we will look into the matter, and in a lot of these instances, we've been able to get the calls to stop.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We have some calls waiting. We'll get to those. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about debt collectors, the good, the bad, and the ugly, with Susan Chay from the Ohio Attorney General's Office, Gail Hillebrand from the Consumers Union Financial Services, and also Jackie Gutter will be joining us. She's from the Legal Aid Society of Columbus. All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. And remember, it's simple and easy to renew your WOSU membership. Your membership means that all your trusted local and national news and information will continue on WOSU. Is it time to renew your membership? Just go online to WOSU.org and click on the Pledge Now box. And thank you for your support of WOSU 820 NPR News. 50 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:19. Sunshine today, a high of 55. Clear skies tonight, a low of 35. And sunshine tomorrow with a high of 58.
Support for WOSU comes from Ohio Wesleyan University, congratulating its students on receiving the Presidential Award for Higher Education Community Service. Last year, nearly 1,800 Ohio Wesleyan students gave their time and talent to help others. OWU.edu.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about debt collection, debt collectors. Gail Hillebrand, you're the senior attorney for Consumers Union Financial Services. One of your specialties is debt collection scams.
Yes.
What kind of things are? What do you mean by that?
There are two things that can happen to you. There are lots of them, but two of the big ones are identity theft and paying for services that you don't receive to help you with your debt. So on the identity theft side, if you get a phone call from someone who claims to have, you know, they've got your name and social, and they're trying to confirm your bank account, they've got your name and your bank account, they're trying to confirm your social. Basically, you never give personal information to anyone who calls you, no matter what they seem to already know about you. And there was a big scam going around last summer that was basically they had so much information they sounded like a real collector, and you don't want to confirm that, you don't want to give any more. The other problem, I think, is even bigger and more ongoing, and that is that we see consumers all over the country signing up for debt settlement services. The service claims that it will help you get rid of your debts for 50 cents on the dollar or some similar number. But what it really involves is stopping paying your bills, saving up your own money, having a fee come right out of your savings, and then finding out you haven't saved enough to get rid of your debts. So anybody who says, I can help you pay me a fee in advance or give me access to your savings account or bank account in advance is probably not going to be able to help you.
Susan, you're nodding your head.
Well, I absolutely agree. We were out talking to some folks in Athens and Dayton recently, and we were talking about debt collection because we've seen such a rise in it. And the attorney general always, when he talks about folks, is, if you're up late at night worrying about debt, don't call these 1-800 numbers that you see for, these debt advisory companies, these debt settlement companies, because the general business model, as Gail talked about, is they basically use your savings and then charge you a fee to pay off your debt. And they, they'll indicate that they'll try to resolve it for pennies on the dollar.
I wanted to clarify. We're talking about debt collectors, but I wrote a column for the Columbus Dispatch a couple years ago regarding an Aaron Rents Inc., one of those rental companies, and woman was unable to make a couple of her payments. She fell behind on some furniture rental and a television. Her car broke down. The usual. It was bad risk, but these rent-to-own companies often that's what they embrace are bad risks. Anyways, they had her arrested. That summer, the Whitehall police actually went and arrested her. And I wondered, is this also considered a civil sort of a situation and not a criminal when it comes to that? Or are we only talking about debt collectors? Pregnant silence.
Susan.
since it's local. I mean, I can't speak to that specific situation.
Sure.
But when we're talking about debt collection, it is a civil matter. At least that's the way I view it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for instance, we have complaints of individuals being threatened with jail time.
Yeah.
And we take action on those because we believe that's a violation of the debt collection.
Yeah,
Act.
She was more than threatened. She
right.
was actually arrested.
Right.
So an interesting set. Let's go to some callers, 614-292-8513. And Deborah, you had a question about whether the rules apply to the Attorney General's office.
Hi.
Hi.
Let's see. The state attorney general's office hires attorneys, and they call them special counsel to the state attorney
right.
general's office, that collects money that is owed to the state. And these attorneys make a commission on right. how successful they are at collecting this money. And this is happening to us at this time. I am finding that these attorneys are every bit as big a shark as the other creditors that we have at this time. And in this case, we owe state taxes on top of money to the medical center. We filed for bankruptcy because of our house being foreclosed on, and we were told that the state taxes, since they are older than 3 years, would be discharged in the bankruptcy. And now the attorneys, the special counsel to the state attorney general's office, is telling us, oh, no. Even though your bankruptcy has been discharged, you still owe these taxes.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, are they correct, or were we told incorrect things about these taxes not being owed after 3 years in a bankruptcy? And how can, if we really owe these taxes, how can we work with them not to have our paychecks, I forgot the word for it.
Garnished.
Garnished, thank you. And because can we really work out an amount that we can live with?
So the question is, can you get the same sort – do you have the same sort of rights when it comes to owing the state? And Susan, any thoughts about that? Thank you for your call, Deborah.
Sure. It can be different when it's the government. And I can't talk to the caller specific
–
bankruptcy situation, but if we do have the caller's name and information and I can get it off the air, I'll look into it.
Okay, Deborah, you can call back and give your name and identifying information, and Susan will look into that. We have with us as well Jackie Gutter. She's a staff attorney with the Legal Aid Society of Columbus, and We invited her here because they have started a clinic at the behest or with in partnership with the Attorney General's Office and the Columbus Bar Association. Susan, can you tell us how that came about? You know, why the clinic? Why now?
Well, it all started actually with an email. I got a call, an email from Lisa Usherman, who's with the Columbus Bar Association, asking about our interest in promoting a clinic, and we thought it was a great idea in light of the rise in debt collection complaints we've seen and also the increasing presence of debt buyers. One of the debt buyer models is that they'll just file a lot of lawsuits, and they win because people don't file what we call answers, and they end up defaulting, and so they take judgments on these, and then consumers don't realize they can garnish their wages and take other actions. So a clinic to address these types of issues we thought was a great idea.
So, Jackie, how does the clinic work now?
Well, once a lawsuit is filed, once a lawsuit is filed against you, the legal aid number is on the summons, and you would call in, describe your issue, and they will direct you to a callback system, and I make the callbacks. And once you're deemed appropriate, you would come in for the clinic. It's once a month. And the first part is basically a PowerPoint overview of the court process with debt collection cases. And then you can meet with an attorney one-on-one to get assistance in filing or in filling out your answer. It is not for representation, but it is assistance in filling out your answer. And, you know, one of the major goals of the clinic was to prevent default judgments and to have the cases decided on the merits as opposed to a technicality. And it's been very successful in that regard.
And who works in it?
I think the way that the clinic will operate is that it's going to meet once a month. And Jackie, I know that you know the details on that, but generally it's pro bono volunteers. So any attorney in Franklin County or outside Franklin County, if folks want to drive
in. The Legal Aid Society actually, you serve multiple counties, right?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
But I think the program itself is actually with the Franklin County court system. So attorneys can volunteer. They're going to get a training. So, for instance, we're actually going to provide a trainer for the training that they'll be announcing. I think right now the training is scheduled for April 14th. It'll be at the Legal Aid Society of Columbus. I think it's at 1 p.m. I'm sure Jackie can provide more information on it. It's going to be a great overview. I've seen the outline. I think it'd be great. I think it's a fairly simple process, and also attorneys, the commitment is really clinic hours. So you're talking maybe 4 hours a month, maybe at the most. Is that about right,
Jackie? At the most.
Yeah, about 4 hours a month. And it's a great thing because if someone can file an answer or a response to a complaint and not get a default, they can then engage in a conversation, maybe go to mediation, and try to resolve it.
Gail, what do you think about these sorts of things? Is this happening elsewhere around the country?
Legal clinics are an important stopgap for people who can't get lawyers. This one is particularly important because when you file that paper and engage in the legal process, then, as the Attorney General said, you have a chance to have a discussion, maybe a settlement. There's a court looking over what's going on. You don't just get a rubber stamp judgment against you. Once a judgment's been entered, it's very hard to undo. Usually impossible to undo, and it's going to stay on your record even longer than a collection action. In many states, it can be renewed, so it could stay on your record for up to 20 years. So if you're already in trouble with your debt, don't ignore your mail. Don't ignore that confusing stuff you get from the court. That means the process is getting ramped up, and you need that help.
Okay. We are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about debt collection, debt collectors. What are your rights? Joining me today, Susan Che. She's chief of the Consumer Protection Section of the Ohio Attorney General's Office. And also Gail Hillebrand. She's senior attorney for the Consumers Union Financial Services. And Jackie Gutter. She is staff attorney for the Legal Aid of Society of Columbus. 614-292-8513. Or you can email us at allsideswithannfisher. I'm sorry. Blah, blah, blah. allsides@wosu.org. If you have any questions or comments. And Georgia, you're on the air. You have a question about somebody if you're getting the wrong calls.
Yes, Georgia. Hi.
Hi.
I'm sorry. I lost the phone there for a second.
No problem.
Not exactly a question, but another thing came up, too. There's a couple of cases where so-called civil debts can be criminal, as in a bad check or a conversion of trust or an outright fraud. So when you're talking about somebody threatening to be arrested, there could be a situation like that. But the other thing about the gentleman who was getting the calls from an agency that was just leaving a phone number repeatedly, mm-hmm. I think the smartest thing he could do would be call him back and say, I'm John Doe at 1234 High Street at phone number such and such. He's not telling them anything they don't know, because they're either calling him because their debtor was at his address or because their debtor had his phone number. They're getting him out of a crisscross directory. And if he calls back and references that phone number and address, he can probably convince them that he's the wrong person. And in the process, he can pin down who it is, so that if it becomes repetitive, then he has substance to name in a complaint. But the thing is, he can't give them anything other than John Doe, address, phone number, because they already know that.
Don't you think by giving them the address, though, anyone want to jump in here, that you are giving them more information than they have? That gives them another way to start?
No, because if they've got the phone number, they've got the address.
Okay, they have the crisscross, right.
Directories that they're picking him up for a reason, either because of that phone number or because of that physical address.
Okay.
And if he can establish that he is John Doe but not the person they want, then it'll stop. They're not doing it to aggravating him. They're doing it because they believe their debtor is there.
Now, Georgia, how do you know all this?
20 years in the collection business.
Okay. There was a sense of authority. Susan, what do you think about that advice?
You know, we've certainly had consumers try that. The problem sometimes, though, is that with those 1-800 numbers, that they don't accept receiving calls. And unless if they've maybe left a number for him to contact, which I'm not sure in this situation, that certainly might be something to do in terms of getting them to cease the calls. We always tell folks it's helpful to us if they can document when they get the calls and the numbers. But if they do file a complaint with us, we are usually successful at getting the calls to stop.
Thanks, Georgia, for your call.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye.
Dave, you're on the air. You're talking with Susan Che from the Ohio Attorney General's Office, Gail Hillebrand from the Consumers Union, and Jackie Gutter from the Legal Aid Society of Columbus. Hello?
Who you have?
I've got a whole bunch of people here, Dave. What's your question?
Oh, okay. I didn't hear my name and it fogged out when you were on the phone.
Okay.
My question is, I owe a little debt, or my wife owes credit card debt. I was disabled off a job. I guess my question is, if you just don't, we owe back property taxes on the house.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, what can the credit card company do, or ultimately what can happen if you just can't pay? I tried to get them, they upped her interest rate for no reason when we were paying it, every month. I'd probably pay the debt three times by now. But, I called them and tried to, get the interest rate down. They wouldn't do it. And then about a year later, we finally pooped out. The interest rate went up again, and we couldn't make the payments. And now I don't have a job. I was disabled off of my job. I haven't been able to find work. She isn't working and can't find a job right now.
You can't pay.
It's hard to call up people and make a plan when there's no... I don't know how I'm going to pay the electric bill next month,
right.
Susan,
this is probably a pretty common situation.
Absolutely.
Thanks for your call, Dave.
Sure, absolutely. And we hear that, that Ohioans are struggling. I'm hearing a couple things from Dave. One, that both he and his wife are not working, but it appears they own a house. We certainly don't encourage folks to do bankruptcy, but I think in this situation, depending on whether this is temporary or more of a permanent nature, because I'm also hearing disability in there also,
yeah.
He may want to consult with an attorney to see what the best options are. Sometimes we tell folks to go see nonprofit true consumer credit counselors if they've seen a decrease in income, but here with no income and debt, these may be issues. And because they own a house, I think it's important they get the appropriate information to protect that asset.
Okay. Brian, you're on the air. You have good versus bad experiences with collectors.
Yeah, I actually had a kind of what you guys were talking about, where creditors were threatening to call family members or employers, and ultimately that just resulted in a stalemate. And But I also had a good, I guess, collector who actually was willing to work with me. And eventually the debt was paid in full, so I didn't have to settle, which is at first when they told me don't settle, I figured that was just a ploy. And then I checked around and I found out that it actually was something that could damage my credit, so it behooved me to pay it off, which I did. One thing I ended up doing was going through a third-party kind of like consumer credit counseling or what have you. But this is for they say nonprofit, but they ask you to pay like $45 a month. And what I realized was I'm paying this company $45 a month, and that was money that was not going towards my four other credit cards. And so eventually I broke down and just worked with all my credit card companies, and including two collection agencies, and was able to, over a period of 3 years, pay my debt off. So there are good, I guess, collection agencies and bad ones, like your guests are saying. And the important thing is just to keep a cool head, I guess, and don't, I guess, fall into all their lies about calling family members and employers and stuff like that.
Okay, Brian, thanks for your call. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What do you make of that? Was Brian's advice good advice?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think it depends on the individual situation, but I think Brian had a good point, which is that there are good collectors also, and that one of the reasons that that we try to address bad collectors is that it makes it a fair marketplace. So if you have folks engaging in bad conduct, it hurts the folks that are engaging in good conduct.
Okay. We're going to take another short break. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
The next Fresh Air, Michael Lewis, the author of Liar's Poker, Moneyball, and The Blind Side, talks about his new book, The Big Short. It's about the people who made a fortune when the financial system collapsed because they bet against subprime mortgage derivatives and the financial institutions that sold them. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Get the latest information from WOSU the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. Go to wosu.org/email and sign up for one of our e-newsletters. And remember, you can access WOSU anytime at our website. Hear the latest updates from NPR and WOSU News from the convenience of your computer by streaming on the web. Listen online at WOSU.org. 52 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high of 55. Clear skies tonight and a low of 35 degrees. More sunshine for Wednesday and a high right around 60. And more sunshine on Thursday as well with a high of 61. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about debt collection. It is a common ailment these days in light of the recession, the economic downturn, especially in Ohio. Ohio's got to be bad, got to be worse off than a lot of the states. Joining us today is Jackie Gutter from the Legal Aid Society of Columbus. Also, Susan Che, she's chief of the Consumer Protection Section of the Ohio Attorney General's Office. And Gail Hillebrand, she's senior attorney for the Consumers Union Financial Services. Jackie, the Legal Aid Society of Columbus has taken some financial hits itself. Last year, they lost about $1 million in funding, had to lay off seven attorneys. How are you coping with that? Regardless, there had to have already been people calling and looking for help with some of these issues.
Yes, it's really difficult because of our resources. We have to turn away a lot of clients. And that's one reason why the clinic is so good, is we can help, you know, more people than normally we could. It's unfortunate because people really would prefer to have an attorney throughout the process. But, you know, this is a pretty good alternative.
So how is it being funded? Is the Attorney General's office, how's this working? It's just all volunteer?
The pro bono aspect of it, you know, that's with the
Columbus
training and everything, you know, that's hopefully going to get more pro bono attorneys doing it. Right now, it's been the majority of legal aid doing it.
Okay. And the training and everything is being paid for by legal aid?
Mostly, yes, that's correct.
Okay. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from David. He writes, I have been getting calls from collection agencies for debts owed by a person who shares my first and last names. However, his middle initial is different. He's younger and lives in a different state. The collection callers, until recently, have been rude when I try to explain that I am not this indebted person. How do I get the calls to stop, and does this affect my credit score? Anybody? Gail?
Yeah, let's start with your credit score. It will affect your credit score only if it is wrongly reported on your credit report. So you go to annualcreditreport.com and get your credit report from the big three bureaus and see if it's on there. If it is, you have the right to file a dispute, and it has to be taken off if it's not verified. But you have to do the homework as the consumer to make sure this bad thing that never should have happened to you isn't happening to you.
Is that pretty common, the names?
It's very common when you have a common name to get that. We also, in the identity theft situation, we've seen a collection action or a credit report where it was a two-year-old and it was somebody in another state using their name and social. So we do see that. It can happen to you. And unfortunately, you have to do the homework to make sure they haven't put it on your credit report.
Gail, do we have any idea how many bogus credit cases are out there that are the result of identity theft versus just mixing up the names, mixing up the addresses and the phone number type of things?
In terms of total number of collections, we don't know. In terms of raw dollar, it's about $8 million a year in identity theft debt of one kind or another. Some of that is brand new accounts opened in your name. Some of it is misuse of your existing cards.
This must be a pretty good business, though, because there's about 4,100 companies that do debt collection in the United States, and they generate about $40 billion in revenue for the companies that are in terms of getting revenue or getting repayment on the debts.
Right. I mean, the debt buying business, they will buy the debt for 25 cents to down to about 4 or 5 cents on the dollar, and then they try to collect 100 cents on the dollar. You don't have to collect a whole lot to make money under that business model.
Has there been a proliferation of debt collectors?
There's certainly been a proliferation of debt buying, of the debt moving around from one collector to another. And because of the economy, of course, there are more people who are in some trouble, meaning more potential collection. If you're in trouble with your debts and you're not yet in collection, or you're just at the beginning of a collection process, you haven't been sued, you can find a true nonprofit consumer credit counselor by contacting the National Foundation for Consumer Credit. I'd like to give that number.
Sure.
It's 1-800-388-2227.
That's the National Foundation.
That's a national toll-free phone number, and they will hook you up with a person in your state who can sit down with you, look at your budget, look at your card usage, give you financial advice, but also help you to get on a payment plan where you will actually be paying off your debts every month.
And, Susan, there is an 800 number for the Ohio Attorney General's office as well, isn't there?
Yes, there is. So any consumer can contact us for a number of issues. The number there is 1-800-282-0515.
Okay, and we'll post both of those numbers on the website, wosu.org/allsides, after the program. 614-292-8513. Have a comment? Want some advice? Now's your time to call. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Murph, you're on the air.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a credit card that has been inactive for several years. And granted, I do owe them some money. However, I have tried to call the credit card agency to settle it. Haven't got any response. I've been recently receiving a phone call from the quote-unquote collection agency. Now, I asked these people to send me a letter from the original credit card company stating that they're the people I need to be talking to. And I can't get a response. I was told that by an attorney friend, and he's not really in collections. He's in real estate. Is that the right way to go?
Jackie, you're nodding. Have you heard of this before?
Well, oftentimes when the cases are filed by debt collectors, they do not attach what's the legal term, assignment, which is proof that they purchased that specific debt. And they are supposed to send that along with the verification letter. My advice with a lot of these who are getting calls is to send the cease and desist letters and let them then file it in court if they want to pursue it, because the cease and desist letters is supposed to get them to stop the calls. And I would also keep a record of the types of calls they were getting from these collectors and if they continue to call after the cease and desist letter.
The unfortunate thing for them, when they called me originally, I said, well, who is the debt with? And they gave me a credit card that I'd already paid off. It's got to be some kind of a scam.
And that's why it's good to try to get it into the courts. If they want to file a case, let them file a case, and that way it can get sorted out.
Does that smell like a scam to you, Gail?
It could be a scam. It could be a mistake. Mm-hmm. If you have paid it off, it's important to tell them, I paid for this. I have the record. I can send it to you.
Well, I did.
You did that, and they're just ignoring it. Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. And then they said, well, but there's another one.
Oh.
And, you know, it's almost like they pulled my credit report, and they're just going through numbers.
Yeah, it's like the scarf trick.
Yeah, it could be that, or it could be that they bought a bunch of debts. The other thing you can do if you have paid and the collection agent is ignoring it is go to the original creditor and say, I paid this, I told your collection agency I paid it, and they're still after me. And sometimes they can yank it back from collection.
Well, no, I agree that I owe this other debt.
Yeah.
But they can't give me any background. They can't even tell me who it's from.
Yeah.
Well, that they are required to do.
It looks like a scam to me.
Okay.
Yeah, it could be. If they can't tell you at least the name of the original creditor and the original debt amount, it could be a scam.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thanks for your call, Murph.
Thank you.
Susan, did you have something to add there?
I think consumers can also request verification in writing and validation of the debt. And so, for instance, this may be a debt buyer who sometimes what they'll do is they'll bundle up debts and purchase a bundle of debts for pennies on the dollar. So for consumers that are trying to make sure that – trying to figure out what's going on, they can send a letter basically requesting a verification validation of the debt, including the amount due and the name of the original creditor. They're required to provide it.
I wanted to repeat those phone numbers one more time. From the Ohio Attorney General's Office, you have questions, you want to get more information about the clinic that's upcoming – 1-800-282-0515. And then, Gail, the organization, it's the National Foundation.
For Consumer Credit Counseling.
For Consumer Credit Counseling, uh-huh.
NFCC.org, NFCC.org, mm-hmm. Or 1-800-388-2227.
Thank you. And we will post that stuff on the website, WOSU.org/allsides, after the program. Rod, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I had a situation similar to Mark's. I had a credit card that I had paid, you know, went into collection, but I had paid off. And then several years later, I had a collection agency approach me about essentially taking a second bite of the apple, you know, they wanted to collect that money again. And also, similar situation. They couldn't tell me. You know, they told me it was a Visa card, but they couldn't give me the Visa card number or anything like that. And I just wondering, you know, how long this was several years after I had paid off the credit card, and I was wondering, how long they're allowed to go after debtors like that.
You know, you've put your finger on a really important problem. We have actually suggested to the Federal Trade Commission that there ought to be a national limit on old debt when a debt is too old. There's already a state limit on when you can be sued on a debt that's too old. And there's already a limit on when it's too old to put in your credit report, although there have been some problems and violations with that. But there's no limit on when it's too old to collect. And we think that there is some point in time at which it's just too late. You don't have the records anymore. It's not really fair. And what this does show is if you've paid something off, you better hang on to those records for a very long time.
The debt collection industry is looking for other changes. Well, they're looking for changes to the law to make it easier for them to do their job as well. What are some of those things, Gail? Do you know?
They want to be able to call your cell phone and leave message. They want to be able to make a few more contacts. They're very restricted. They can't call someone up and say, I'm calling about so-and-so's debt. They can call and try to find out where you are, but not talk about the debt. They want some more in those areas, I think.
Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org for question or comment. We have an email from Ella. She writes, I know of adults who have used a minor's Social Security number for turning on gas or cable charges, etc. Is the minor responsible for any debt from this unauthorized use of his number? Anyone? Susan?
No, the minor is not responsible. One, anyone under the age of 18, outside of certain exceptions, can't enter into that type of contract. And there it would have been the fraudulent use of that minor Social Security number, so they are not responsible.
But it can – I've heard of the cases where even though that's the case, it's not allowed. It does ruin – or people can spend years trying to clean up their debt or their credit record.
Sure, and it goes back to something Gail alluded to earlier, which is about checking your credit report. So, for instance, if there is information with respect to an unpaid utility that they're saying that you owe, you can dispute that with the credit bureau that's reporting that information. So, for instance, if you were 10 at the time that the debt was incurred, you should be able to prove that, dispute that, and have that removed from your credit bureau.
In addition, if there's somebody out there who's actively using your Social Security number, you may want to place what's called a security freeze on your big three credit files. You do have to pay a fee for that unless you've already been a victim of identity theft. If it's preventative, you're going to pay a $10 fee per bureau. But the freeze will stop anyone from accessing your credit file for purposes of approving new credit. So that means that if someone's out there already misusing your SSN, they'll have to stop using yours and go on to the next guy.
Now, where do you go to establish that security freeze?
You have to make the request individually to each of the three major credit bureaus, and you can get instructions on how to do that in your state at defendyourdollars.org. That's the Consumers Union website. Just click on Money Topics and poke around in our financial privacy page till you find it.
Right. And in Ohio, there's a specific credit freeze state law also. And generally, if you haven't been the victim of identity theft, it's $5 per credit bureau, at least in the state of Ohio. And so that information is also available.
Can we talk a little bit more about the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act? Do you think, unless people are actually in the midst of it, and often when they are in the midst of a debt problem, the last thing they're going to hear about is this act. Is it really something that people know enough about, Gail?
I think we never know enough about our consumer rights until we need them. But the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act is important, not only because it says collectors can't do certain things, but because if a collector does those illegal things to you, threatens to arrest you, claims they're going to sue you when they're not going to, calls repeatedly with intent to harass, et cetera, you have a right to what are called statutory damages. And the idea there is that there should be some penalty attached. And not only can you collect those from the debt collector, but you can offset them against the debt that you owe. And that's why it's so important to get a legal defense when you're sued for debt collection.
We have an email right now. It's from Carol, but I just want to preface that I'm not quite sure what her point is. She asks whether wonders if you think identity theft insurance is worth it, if it's a good investment.
We at Consumers Union recommend against the purchase of all sorts of small, single-purpose insurances, including identity theft insurance. If you're getting for free from your homeowner's policy, that's a different question. But if you're being asked to pay extra for it, most of your identity theft cost will be the time you lose from work or from your family because you're sorting out the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the monetary losses are borne by the businesses, not by the individual.
Okay. Same, Susan.
I would agree with that. Yeah. So you should check with your homeowner's policy and with your insurance agent to see if it's a de minimis cost or if it's included.
Okay. Is it typical to have it included?
I think it depends. I don't think consumers read their policies enough, but it's something that they should look into.
Yeah, I would have probably fallen into that category. Guilty as charged. And you know what? They write them so that you won't read them very often. It's like worse than the dictionary. Jackie Gutter. What would be the most common general advice you would give folks out there? A lot of folks, maybe they're not in debt yet, but they're skirting it. They're coming up. You know, the unemployment benefits are running out for a lot of people. What advice do you give people to avoid having to ever come to you?
Well, that's difficult because I have actually gotten a lot of calls from people who have tried to work something out with their creditors. You know, if they've lost their job, they've lost some of their income. And a lot of creditors aren't so willing to work with them. Now, the problem is they have little to no money, so there's not much to work with. But the biggest advice I can give once you're already in the process is don't ignore lawsuits. I think a lot of people are scared. I think a lot of people assume they owe some sort of debt, and so they don't want to do anything about it because they can't afford to pay it. And they do have rights. They do have defenses. There's a lot of types of income that's exempt. So even though they may owe the debt, they won't have to pay it. And so these companies, especially the debt buyers, they make their money through the default judgments. And so I think that's the biggest issue because the complaints aren't being filed correctly. They're not being pled correctly. And so there are defenses, and I think answering the complaints is the biggest advice I would give.
Susan?
You know, I think just a couple points. Open your mail. Engage your creditors. I know sometimes it doesn't work out. If you're unable to do that, you know, contact and look at the website for the National Foundation to look for a local credit counselor in your area. If you absolutely have no money and you have certain assets that you need to protect, you may need to speak with a bankruptcy attorney. If you're having problems with a debt collector harassing you and you want the harassment to stop or want to report it, please report it to us. One, we obviously try to work with the consumer to resolve that situation in terms of the harassment, but it really helps us then to look at pattern and practice behavior with respect to third-party debt collectors so that we can take action. Like, for instance, last summer we took action against a debt collector in Northeast Ohio.
Gail, any parting advice for the folks out there?
I agree with everything that's been said. I would just say if you're not in trouble yet, it's still a good time to put your credit cards in the drawer. We don't know what the future holds, and especially for all of us who are dependent on one or two income households, mm-hmm. we don't know what that's going to be in a couple of months. So the less debt you have, the more protection you have in any economy, but especially in this economy.
Yeah, they say the recession's over, but the fallout's just starting to hit us.
Yeah.
Especially in Ohio. Thank you so much, Gail Hillebrand, Senior Attorney for the Consumers Union Financial Services. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
And also Susan Chase, she's the Chief of the Consumer Protection Section in the Ohio Attorney General's Office. Thanks for joining us, Susan.
Thank you.
And Jackie, it looks like you guys are going to be pretty busy in a few months. Jackie Gutter, she's staff attorney, and she'll be managing the clinic, the debt collection clinic, or what are you calling it? What's the catchphrase? Anything yet? Any catchy phrases?
Just the Consumer Debt Collection
Consumer
Clinic
Debt Collection
point.
Clinic at the Legal Aid Society of Columbus. Call 1-800-282 at the Ohio Attorney General's office for more information about that. And again, Jackie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.